everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. We will be joined momentarily by Mr. Patrick Barrett, but he is still en route and will be here shortly. So in the meantime, I think what I would like to do, well, first of all, let me just say that for those of you who like to tune in to the program, that we actually canceled the last one 2 weeks ago. And it's as a person who often reports on the status of COVID around the city of Cambridge, we actually were in a situation here where I actually got it. So that would explain actually my absence last week. But but I'm back, and now joining us of this apparition, this vampire-like gentleman here named Mr. Patrick Barrett. Did you get a haircut?
I got them all cut, buddy.
Oh my goodness.
All right, I just ran over 20,000 people to get here from North Cambridge on time.
All right. So this shows dedication. I'm really, really happy to see it, Patrick. Thank you very much. You know, I just mentioned that, you know, we were originally scheduled to do the program 2 weeks ago, but, always looking as an outsider looking in, talking about the status of COVID around Cambridge, I actually got it and was kind of out of commission for a while, but mild symptoms compared to a lot of other people. So I'm very, very grateful for that. And I'm just fine now. Thank you very much. So
you look fantastic.
Why, thank you, sir. one other thing I thought I would mention here, just at the top of the hour here is, I've been sort of a little bit nostalgic lately thinking about, the fact that, writing Cambridge Civic Journal for 25 years, the 25th anniversary is, the original one was around now, right?
So congratulations.
It's really quite something. But, when you start thinking about the passage of time, you also think about some of the people you've met along the way. And one of the people I want to mention that I met along the way, not so much in the context of writing about Cambridge Civic Journal, because it actually predates it, but it was a fellow named Jack Thomas. And I just want to say a quick word or two about Jack, because Jack passed away on Saturday. And Jack was a writer who wrote for the Boston Globe, was a remarkable fellow. And I always read his articles. And then I actually got to meet him some years ago because I sold him a backyard composter and we had a delightful afternoon sitting drinking gin and tonics on his porch. And liked him a lot and always respected his work. And about his last summer in July of 2021, he actually got a terminal diagnosis. And he wrote an article for the Boston Globe, which was actually, I believe, the most widely read article in the Globe all of last year. Anyway, he passed away on Saturday. And I just wanted to sort of give a little shout out to Jack Thomas. I have a particular respect for like serious journalists who kind of are old school journalists. There's a fellow named Paul Hurston used to come up to the Cambridge City Council meetings years ago, wrote for the Boston Globe, had an amazing ability to just read the room, take in things, real old school. And always, I really kind of looked up to a lot of these people. So anyway, so a farewell to Jack Thomas, one hell of a great guy. So anyway, back here, Patrick, you've raced here from, I believe, North Cambridge.
I did. I had a day pass to go.
That's really good. It's like as long as you didn't leave the city, because I'll find out.
Right? I'm normally not allowed to leave Central Square, so I usually have to ask permission to do that. And the people of North Cambridge were gracious enough to host me for about an hour and a half until they were sick of me and then sent me back home.
Okay. You're sort of like a man about town. We're sort of in a funny position here in that both you and I, perhaps you more so than I, wear multiple hats. So on the one hand, we're still going to sit here and make commentary about the world and Cambridge and whatever. But on the other hand, you are also a property owner in Central Square, who's engaged in actual projects. I actually serve on a Central Square Advisory Committee and actually sometimes have to review projects, including at some point something coming from you. So
we've, always, We've done time on committees otherwise too. We're Red Ribbon, C2, time served.
You know, I remember back when we were, when I, when not we, when I was really starting a Civic Journal back in 1997, that, you know, the original idea was to sort of, it was to be writing about civic affairs as a participant. I mean, back in those days, I was even a political candidate. That's how much I, you know, tried to participate in the whole process.
Your Robert Winter's number one bumper sticker on my truck raised its value by at least 3,000 or 4,000. So I appreciate
three it. 3,000 or 4,000 German marks around the period between World War One and Two. I'm sure.
That was very prominent bumper sticker. Very proud.
No, actually, I think we've discussed this at one point where. It was a bus driver, just when I used to take the 68 bus to work when I worked at MIT, who, you know, we used to talk every morning. And then he commented and he said, wait a minute, what's going on here? I was behind somebody's car or truck, you know, and they had a bumper sticker with their name on it. I said, all right, you got stuck behind the one guy with my bumper sticker on it. But he was very confused by it all. Yeah, it is. Tis true. Tis true. By the way, let me just say, I don't want to dwell on COVID other than the fact that I had it, you know, so I'm part of the, I'm now a card carrying.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Now we probably at some point should be counting not how many people have had it, but how many haven't. Right. But on a serious note, there was actually, the numbers are great. We actually dipped the 7-day average dipped below 20 today, which it hasn't done in a good long while. But there was also one new fatality. It's sort of like, you got to take the good with the bad, you know, somebody in long-term care. Anyway, so I just thought it was worth mentioning. About things going on around town, Patrick, at some point, maybe we should say what you've got going on in Central Square, or we could talk about last night at City Hall.
Do I have something going on in Central Square?
I believe
that doesn't
you
sound
do.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, I tell you what, let's delay that a little bit here. Okay. Talk a little bit about what went down yesterday, you know, and again, for those who would like to read, you know, read along at home about this, you can also, you know, I post a lot of my snarky comments about this up on Cambridge Civic Journal and elsewhere, you know, so I'll just sort of refer to a few of these things as we go here. So one of the things I actually found kind of comical, but I don't mean to be in any way mean-spirited. I'm not really trying to be that way at all. But there was a message from the new city manager, Yan Huang, who I think is shaping up to be a pretty good city manager so far. But it was announcing some new positions, you know, that, you know, to be hired for the city. And one of them, I don't know why this makes me laugh so much, but you know, nobody wants to say things. I heard one city councilor last night was saying, you know, we're so outdated. We call it the personnel department. You know, why aren't we calling it human resources or something else?
And that's probably the most important issue facing the city right now. So I'm grateful for that input.
That's right. That's right. So, but you know, in the spirit of moving from personnel to human resources, what was proposed were several new positions, four positions, one of whom made total sense to me. It was like sort of a director of emergency management. And, you know, if we haven't learned a thing from the last couple of years, it's that, well, maybe we need to be really, really clean about that, you know?
Yeah.
We used to actually have a Department of Emergency Management and then a Department of Emergency Communications that got merged, you know, and are sort of affiliated with police and fire now. I thought, well, maybe they'll actually revive it and sort of restructure things. And I think there's some good sense in that. But the ones that sort of made me laugh a little bit, only because I'm a cynical bastard, was the chief people officer.
You gotta have a chief people officer.
I thought, okay,
chief of the people.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, you can't just send me like the person who sort of oversees employ, you know, the city employees
is that the officer Is that the job description for a chief people officer? I wouldn't want to put that on my business card.
Well, I don't know.
I think people might think it was a joke.
I kind of laughed about it. There's also one that it's called the talent officer.
Nice.
All right, what's this going? I mean, I'm sure part of it has to do with things like, diversity, equity, inclusion, and many of the other things.
The talent officer?
Yeah,
that's to determine whether or not a city councilor can juggle or ride a unicycle.
See, now that's what I want in a talent officer.
McGovern's very good with.
I want to know that any public works employee can at least sing a tune, or else that's it. You've got no job working on the trash trucks,
I just kind of imagine like Lee Gianetti with, like Elvis, like glasses with a sparkly shirt, being like, all right, who's got something for me? The chief talent officer.
I have it on good authority that Lee can do that, actually. Yeah. and actually, speaking of not necessarily, we do seem to have a lot of PR flacks in departments. I think that was one of the signs of Louis DePasquale's time as city manager, was bringing on more like public relations kind of people, which, the cynical part of me always says, well, all right. So in other words, you don't necessarily want to do the job. You just want to talk to the public a lot and tell them what you're doing. Which is not to say they aren't doing their jobs, by the way, but I think there comes a point where the number of PR flacks starts to become too much. And we have a public information office that we have people already.
But it never occurred to me in looking over our budgets over the years or looking over the departments that we were critically understaffed. Bully to the manager for appointing some new folks, but I'd rather see some interdepartmental shifts.
Well, that may be part of what's happening. I mean, if the people officer, kind of oversees, interdepartmental activities, whenever, maybe so. There is a job that I don't think anybody should want, but somebody will, is the third of these more interesting ones. It's called the Director of Community Engagement. I said, boy, welcome to Cambridge, whoever gets the job.
That's kind of an interesting job title. I wonder, we have a community development department. The Director of Community Engagement sounds like it might be a liaison for a group like that. I've always kind of imagined, CDD being sort of chopped up like a birthday cake and turned into departments that actually function. I didn't say that. And a director of civic community of community communications is like, that's just one of the things that they're really the most criticized for, is lack of outreach, lack of communication, lack of direction. So maybe this is a step in the right direction.
Well, the first thought that came to mind, having interacted pretty closely with some departments and people over the years, was my interactions with the public works department. I said, if you ever want to see sort of the right way to do things, I don't remember if I told the story here maybe last time, but during the height of the drought, we had a little problem with smells coming from sewers. I called up public works department and it said, I didn't even have to finish my sentence. They already knew what I was talking about. I mean, they're that good,
and that's a problem, Robert. When I first moved here, they're too damn good. I remember calling here as an ignorant, brand new Cambridge person. I called the DPW and said, where's the dump? And they said, we don't have a dump. And I said, well, I missed trash day. And they sent a trash truck to my house. And I was outraged. I was like, how much is this costing taxpayers for my individual trash to be removed? This is completely inefficient. So
But that has always defined my experience. And I used to spend a lot of time at Public Works when I was involved in recycling and compost promotion. And I used to spend a lot of time up in the radio tower, talking with the folks up there, who really, they were like the community, they had 24 hours there on the job up there.
Can make John Nardone the permanent guy?
I have no idea how it's going to work out. But when I called during the height of the drought about some sort of problem with the sewers around here, they knew right away what I was talking about. Said, yeah, we'll send somebody over there to go and put some deodorizing pellets in there, whatever. And then she said to me, I swear to God, she said to me, says, oh yeah, and I want you to do something for me. Like, oh yeah, what? So I want you to go outside and do a rain dance because my tomatoes could really use the water. And I said, okay, now there is the model for communications with the public. I want to nominate whoever that woman was at Public Works Department to be the director of community engagement, because if we could kind of interact with the public with a sense of humor and getting real and, you know, and knowing the city inside and out like that, I think we will be taking a step in the right direction. I mean, even the manager's letter made reference to the unevenness of interaction with the public amongst departments. And I said, yeah, it's probably true, but you don't sort of come up with sort of a czar of communication to necessarily address that. You know, the departments still have to do their jobs in a department.
There has to be a little bit of a cultural change, but I've noticed that for a long time, given the work that I've done on the development side, the departments really do not communicate to each other at all. And I think it's created a lot of inefficiencies and a lot of confusion as a person sort of like looking in. Like you just kind of assume that ISD talks to DPW, talks to CDD, and talks to the water department, et cetera. And that really isn't happening. So maybe this is another attempt to sort of fix that.
I think that, you know, it was once upon a time worse, actually.
Always be worse, my friend.
Right. I mean, there was some period of time, even during Bob Healy's time, and others, that, you know, subsequent city managers, where multiple department heads would actually come together and sort of exchange notes and coordinate some things at least once a week. So, and that didn't happen prior to that. So, I mean, they were moving in the right direction. So anyway, I'm remaining very hopeful that new management will bring good things, but I was
kind of impressed. I sent my first angry email to the manager last night, and he got right back to me. I was kind of shocked, actually, with politeness and civility, and he was pretty articulate, actually. We had a nice little side conversation.
Well, I mean, he does impress me as a person who sort of knows how to sort of work. You know, he knows how to work his bosses. I mean, he's got 9 city councilors who had hired him, and he sort of, I think he sort of says the right things to sort of, you know, at least placate their concerns.
I just assumed, Robert, there's a picture of me in the wall somewhere saying, don't answer this guy's email, don't talk to this guy.
Well, but here's the one true measure of a manager's steel will be when the manager has to say no to city councilors, and when the councilors insist that something is right and you have to explain to them why they're not right and that you actually have a better idea about this, and then try and convince them that in fact yours is the better idea. Because, you know, there's a reason why you hire a city manager to manage the city. There's a presumption that a manager can manage, and political people aren't necessarily overly skilled in that way.
I'm hoping you see that interaction with the discussion that's going on with Budo. I think I froze a little bit there. And linkage. So we'll see.
Yeah. By the way, I noticed that normally I don't actually even replicate any of the communications that are sent into city council meetings, but I did notice as the part of the packet for yesterday's city council meeting, October 3rd, 2022, that there was a letter from Patrick Barrett having to do with BUDO, which is Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance. And really, that's a misnomer now, because it's not really a disclosure ordinance. It is, they're trying to morph it into a mandate for retrofits of existing buildings at potentially considerable cost. So at some point they should probably rename it, because calling it a disclosure ordinance kind of understates.
And I think part of a longer discussion on the legal issues with that is part of the authority that gave them the ability to do this from the state only was really relegating to disclosure of energy usage. It was never supposed to be designed to be a method to tax people, which is what the council is currently turning it into.
Right. And that seemed obvious to me that in fact, when you mandate and require somebody to either do a retrofit at potentially considerable cost, or like they like to say, oh, no, 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 if you don't want to do that, you can just buy energy credits and do all of this here. I said, you know, that is a tax.
I mean, when they were asking people to do this in 2014, like I just assumed, you know, when the council asked me, how much gas do you use in your building? They're not interested in my electric bill. They're interested in my gas bill or how I'm heating my place. They wanted to make sure that, you know, they could figure out some way to make it so they could penalize me for using it. Yeah. It was really a question of when they were going to do it.
See, I naively thought they were just interested in getting a good picture of the landscape of energy
use in the city.
I was born yesterday. I just want everybody to know my birthday was indeed October 3rd, 2022.
Happy birthday!
Yeah, you're very welcome. I've grown a lot since then, really. Yeah. But anyway, there was, in addition to your words of wisdom, pearls of wisdom, it was kind of a little bit of a glitch in the clerk's office where there was actually an extra communication that came from Chamber of Commerce and some of the sort of the heavy hitters that was like filled with questions, you know, and some of the counselors, I found this strange, didn't even know that that communication had been sent there. So thought, well, did you read your materials, you know?
Well, there's also, I think, an issue that the chamber needs to do a better job communicating in general, but, you know, trying to wake them up in this process has been a little bit daunting, but they seem to be awake now, which is good.
Yeah.
But those questions are questions that were asked during the charrette that took place a few weeks ago that went unanswered because I'm not sure if you sat in for that, but most of that presentation was really just a very monotone reiteration of what the law is. They didn't really answer too many questions about what it does, the impact, and how it would be implemented.
Was this that Budo presentation that was supposedly done by Community Development Department and two city councilors who are gung-ho proponents of some of the most harsh changes?
Zondervan and Nolan sat in. I believe Sumbul Siddiqui, the mayor, was also in attendance. There were probably other city councilors who were listening in. We couldn't see each other on the Zoom. It was just only the people who were running the meeting. But you know, it was run by CDD and a fellow by the name of Seth and Suzanne Rasmussen, who's the director of that department on the environmental side. But they probably also have a picture of me in their offices saying don't answer this guy's emails either, because
I was there. They do have a picture of you, but it has these concentric circles and your face is right there in the middle.
Actually, more the dartboard.
Yeah, that's the one, I believe. Yeah.
But, I mean, we asked a lot of basic questions that just went unanswered, which I think to me was like just frustrating. You know, we want to be able to work with the city. We want to be able to try to find some way to find middle ground here. But you know, if they can't answer the most basic questions about their own ordinance, it makes it almost impossible.
You know, one of the observations I've been making often lately to myself and to others was having, you know, sort of followed civic stuff for at least three and a half decades, is that, you know, Cambridge used to be criticized fairly for processing things to death. So somebody had an idea, then we have to process, we had to talk about it, then we had to have 12 community meetings, then we had to do this and do that, and then the whole thing would just end up on a shelf. Or maybe something good would come out of it eventually, right? After a lot of deliberation, right? So people did come to conclusions eventually, right? But what has the trend in more recent days is that, and the phrase, I say it simply this way, is that oftentimes city officials and elected officials do not come to conclusions, they arrive with conclusions. And then it really becomes more a sort of a matter of massaging the public in order to get them to sort of at least go along with what you've already decided.
One thing that I'm actually noticing more and more, and I think the great Donna Lopez flagged this to me ages ago, is that sometimes the counselors don't understand what the other counselors are saying or mean. And they take those interpretations and it gets muddled up. And it's almost like that exercise where you start the conversation 20 feet, 25 people down the line. And by the time you get to it, you don't even know what they're talking about.
They used to call it the game of telephone back. Remember when telephones were around? They actually had wires. Yeah.
So they play that game a lot, and much more than you would think. And I've had conversations recently about this, like this linkage issue that we're talking about in city council right now. And there's some fundamental things the council simply does not understand, and positions that I don't think their colleagues understand that they actually have. which to me, like, maybe the director of communications is like for the council.
Well, there's an idea. Right. No, I think I'm going to agree with you on this one, that it often seems to me that like, for example, whether it's Budo or the matter of the linkage, the proposed changes in the linkage fee that's part of the incentive zoning ordinance, right? They got the word from either somebody with the Affordable Housing Trust or somebody, the housing director within Community Development Department, that this is truth. Right. And then they sort of proceed as though this is truth. And
the Affordable Housing Trust is a hammer and everything is a nail. So right. They look through this very narrow view, but also they don't understand. I mean, there's some things about the ordinance itself they don't seem to fundamentally understand. You know, in part, there was discussion about like the second leg of the amendments that Councilor Burhan and Zeman brought. And for existing buildings, largely incentive zoning isn't an issue, but if it were to knock them down, it magically becomes an issue. So that I think that key component right there was almost lost entirely on the council and the Affordable Housing Trust.
Right. We got about a minute as far as this part of this first half hour, but we will continue after that. But just for those who are not fully aware of what's been going on there, I think they just were originally just going to jack up the rate from 20 something bucks per square foot to 33 without no questions asked. It was pure revenue generation. So to your credit, Mr. Barrett, and to others who at least took interest in this, they've kind of brought into the conversation and apparently even alerted some city councilors that there was more to it than just revenue generation.
Yes.
You know, that there were incentives and disincentives and unintended consequences. And some of the things that they say they don't want, they were actually encouraging, like lab buildings, et cetera. So
well, it's weird for some councilors who talk a big game about big corporations and big developers. They seem to be rushing to the finish line to give them the entire city.
Right. And it kind of works out that way. Anyway, we got to take a break here, but we'll be back in mere minutes, literally, on Cambridge Inside Out.